Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Jacob Richardson's feature film debut, The Aegean, sees the Queensland-based writer-director embrace the Grecian story of a widower, Hector, played by Kostas Mandylor, who finds himself in the orbit of Christos, played by Light, a refugee who finds himself in the waters of the Aegean Sea. As Christos finds himself becoming embedded in Hector's life, he discovers an unexpected bond that will give him a sense of place and purpose that he was missing all along. In the following interview, Jacob talks about the personal connection to the narrative of the Aegean, how he worked with Kostas and Light to create their characters, and what it was like working with cinematographer Oliver Hay and composer Alistair Harrison on the film. Jacob also talks about his journey from being a film critic to a filmmaker and how each creative endeavour impacts the other. The Aegean is released by Radioactive Pictures in Australian cinemas on 16th May 2025. Check your local cinema for screening dates. And if you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook or Blue Sky at thecurbau. We are also a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. Visit patreon.com/thecurbau where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. And look, if you're unable to financially support us, then please consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. We'd also love it if you could rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice. Every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. Here's the trailer for The Aegean, followed by my interview with Jacob Richardson.
Are you looking for Hector?
Yes, sir.
Everyone knows everyone around here. Follow it.
If it isn't little Theodore,
I've been looking for you. You've been staying with that old man, haven't you?
He's a drunk, Theo. And he's gonna drink himself to death.
I'm the hardest worker you ever see. Fastest worker, too.
Do you know what your name means in Greek?
God's gift.
Olivia doesn't need the money, Hector. She needs you.
Am I messing it up already?
No! The only way you can mess it up is to stop trying.
The best way I'd like to start our chat is talking about where your interest in filmmaking came from. What was your journey into becoming a filmmaker?
Yeah, it's probably not the standard journey, I suppose, because I studied engineering and finance at university. So I have a double degree in that. And then I spent years working as a consultant for project management consultant. But I always wanted to do film. When I was in high school, I really wanted to leave and do film. And my parents were sort of very persuasively told me to not do so. So I sort of learned a lot on the fly. I really got into film reviews. And I do a lot of that up here in Brisbane. So while I was doing that, one of the things that I would do is for our social media, I would go along with a camera and I would film a little bit of the event. But up here in Brisbane, a lot of the PR companies who handle, you know, a Disney release or a Universal release or that sort of thing, it's not like a specific Disney representative. It's a PR company and they have other clients. And so they sort of liked what I was doing. And I started working with them on some of their other clients' stuff. And then that sort of led to me in 2020 leaving my consulting job to just do, you know, videography and photography work full time, and then also get into documentary and then eventually, you know, feature filmmaking.
It's a different kind of journey.
Yeah, really different. But I think it worked out, you know, really well. I think a lot of filmmaking is problem solving, right? And with my background through engineering, I had a lot of experience with problem solving, and really the whole engineering course was teaching you how to do that. And another great example also is my producer, Ada, who I met studying finance at university. She left and she did, when she left university, she was doing restructuring. So corporate restructuring for like businesses in trouble. And really there's nothing that's more applicable to filmmaking than that sort of background. background, you know, when you lose money in the budget and suddenly you have to make, you know, the same product for $1 million less, it's sort of the perfect storm.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing I know a lot of filmmakers tend to forget is that creating a film is like running a small business. You want to do the creative side of things, but you forget about the actual need for all of those monetary, the financial background and stuff like that. So being able to have that kind of mindset would really help you when you get onto set. I'm curious then as well, being like Queensland's a real hotbed for filmmaking at the moment, not just Hollywood films, but then local films, so all different levels. Being in that kind of environment, what does that mean for you as an emerging filmmaker?
You know, it's a lot. I think it's a blessing and a curse in some ways because, you know, obviously there's huge, big productions coming down here. And if you're looking to make your little indie production, maybe there's not as much attention on it. Maybe there's not as much interest in it. But at the same time, obviously the crews are really skilled here. Then there's talent here that you can't get anywhere else. Like it's top tier here at the moment, which is great. And I also had a lot of ability to work on some of those productions as well in different roles, you know, if it's like an EPK sort of electronic press kit role or filming interviews and that sort of thing. So I was able to get some experience that way and have a look at what those sets look like before I did my own.
You're talking about working in documentaries. I know one of the shorts that you did was Salt of the Earth, which is a delightful short film. And I'm curious then about your entry into doing that particular short as well and exploring that neck of the woods on screen.
Yeah, that was interesting because it was during COVID. We kind of came up with the idea. A friend of mine had just moved back from, I think, Canada for the coronavirus. And he was staying with me and he noticed I was putting a lot of, like an excessive amount of chicken salt on pretty much everything I was eating. And he sort of asked, you know, we sort of got talking and thought about, oh, who did invent that? And we found out it was a guy called Peter in Adelaide. And so we just thought it'd be a great opportunity to make a documentary and to make something. And that was sort of what I was chomping at the bit to do at the time, was to make something that was a little bit less corporate or commercially focused and something that was just for me. And so we got to direct that together, which was really fun. And we went down to Adelaide and we shot that with Peter. And then it was just like the little short film that could. It just kept going. It played Adelaide Film Festival and it got, you know, a ton of press. It was on the BBC World News. It wound up going on Qantas Airlines. But I think I think a couple months ago, I went down to Gawler, which is a town where he had invented chicken salt, and Peter and I did a little presentation there for, you know, the community, and we showed the film, and they served hot chips with chicken salt with the original blend, which was great. And, you know, the council very wisely tacked onto the back of that a community meeting that they needed all the community to attend as well. So it was a very savvy sort of presentation from them. But yeah, I think that it was a sort of film that I had a lot of fun making and a lot of people sort of like the concept of, but I still have incredible memories of working with Tom on that and just having such a blast being down there and sort of doing our first thing. And, you know, it finding such success was a real encouragement to me.
Yeah. I'm curious then, like outside of the film, the original recipe of the chicken salt, does it taste different than what we get in the shops?
Yeah, it does. You know, Peter, he loves to get it. You can actually still get it if you go to his house. If you go there, he's got an honesty box out the front, and which is really not out the front. It's sort of like down the drive and sort of in the backyard. So if you want to enter a random person's backyard in Adelaide, you can get the original recipe blend. It has a lot of MSG in it. That's one of the things I think they cut when they started producing it commercially. And it sort of has more of an expiry date to it. There's a lot of ingredients like celery and paprika and spice and all these things that are mixed in together. But yeah, he used to make it in these big sort of like garbage bins in the old Ozone Theatre in Gawler, which is like a big cinema that they had taken over. And yeah, it was just the idea of him sort of mixing, you know, 100 kilograms of chicken salt and then trying to sell it in regional South Australia was always great to me.
I mean, they do yeah, things differently there, don't they?
yeah, definitely. And I think that he takes such pride in the chicken salt too. When we went down there, they had a restaurant called Extra Chicken Salt that was in business at the time. And we actually filmed a bit of it and put it in, but they had a chicken salt beer on tap, which was an interesting experience. But I think they've closed subsequently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, geez, that's fascinating. But you're talking about like having a personal connection. I mean, using a lot of chicken salt is a very intimate personal connection. But then, and this will be a strange pivot, there is a personal connection in writing the Aegean as well. And I'm curious if you can talk about your interest in exploring this kind of fatherly relationship on screen with, you know, somebody living in Greece and a refugee. What was your kind of personal perspective to bring this story to life on screen?
Yeah, my grandfather had lost his, or my lost my grandmother, his wife, 5 or so years ago. And it was really like that period of loss which shaped my understanding of relationships and the connections that we hold dear. And so through Hector's, who's the lead character of the Aegean, through his story, I wanted to really convey mine and my grandfather's own experience of the complexities of grief and the importance of human connection in navigating it. So that was sort of the kernel, I suppose, of the script. But then obviously, you know, I'm not Greek, my grandfather's not Greek, so we very much transported it to a, you know, to a setting and a location that I think thematically was going to work with the film a little bit better than, say, like, you know, the Chermside Maya Cafe, which is where a lot of the real events went down.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. I mean, and it's beautifully shot as well. But I guess then the notion, I know you've talked about this in a way before, but the notion of shooting in Australia and using Australia as a substitute for Greece, was that ever raised as a initial discussion point?
Yeah, all the time. And I think it was it for so many different reasons as well. Number one, obviously, the connections that we already have here. So we know crew and we know, you know, potential cast here, which would have made it a lot easier from that perspective. And you could have more crew on set because you're not flying them and accommodating them all the time. But at the same time, also we were actually suggested at one point by one of the screen agencies, like, should you double an island in Queensland for the shores of Greece? And I think for me, it just like, it wasn't feeling authentic to do it that way. And you suffered some detriments by going to Greece, you know, particularly when it came to, as I said, with like crew and not having as many connections there. And in our case as well, you know, we're shooting on a small island. So there's just physically, there's none of the camera rental equipment on that island. There's nothing that you can't just duck down to the shop and get a new cable if you break it. So everything sort of had to be brought from mainland Greece over there. But at the same time, the benefit was that if you wanted a shot of exterior Greece, you just turned the camera on and got a shot of exterior Greece. You know, there was no like trying to find the right part of Stradbroke Island to make look like Greece. It was all around you. And so we really benefited. I think the film benefits a lot from being shot on location in Greece, even though it presented a lot of challenges.
Yeah. We'll talk about the cinematography a bit later on because I do want to explore that, and especially in the notion of what the look of Greece is like. There is a certain style of sunlight that you only get really in that neck of the woods. But before we get there, I do want to talk about the casting. And let's talk about specifically casting Hector to begin with. How did you go about finding the right person? Kostas is wonderful there. How did you find about, you know, going about casting him for that particular role?
It was a long process. And I think for a first-time filmmaker as well, and Ada, who was my producer and my producing partner, also going through that process for the first time, you know, there's a lot of stuff you just don't know about interacting with actors and how to get them on board a project and working with their managers and their agents and, you know, how much money do you offer an actor to be on screen, you know, like these things aren't really, particularly for someone who didn't come from a film school background, it's not easy stuff to sort of find online. So a lot of the stuff for us was sort of trial and error, working our way through that learning curve. But at the same time, we had a really great the rest of our producers were also really great. We had Alyssa and Georgina Stegman on, and Georgina had a lot of experience working with big name cast through her roles as a PR agent. And so we took all of that and we sort of worked through this big list of cast of in terms of who we thought might work. Particularly the age was, you know, a little bit of a challenge. The role itself, of course, is largely a non-speaking role almost. Like the character doesn't really speak until the end of the film. So it sort of takes a actor who has a particular desire to do something like that, which isn't always the case. So we worked through a big, long list of actors. But one thing we really settled on in the end was that we wanted them to have a Greek background. And Kostas has a Greek background. He has an Australian background as well. And for us, he was so passionate about the project and so passionate about going to Greece and bringing his family and sharing the experience in Greece with his family and introducing his young daughter to Greece that we thought it was just going to be like, it was going to be an amazing sort of partnership together. And it turned out to be that exactly. I think we hired him for 5 days. He worked 17 probably. And he kept shooting. Even after the crew wrapped, Kostas and I were still, I put Kostas in a full costume and had him jump in the water. And I tried to film underwater sequences with Kostas, even after everyone else had gone pretty much. So he was such a team player. I think we definitely made the right choice.
And as you're saying, like he's, a lot of his performance is internal and we see a lot through his mm-hmm. eyes. Can you talk about the rehearsal process to help get him to that point to be able to present those emotions in his eyes, in his visual presentation without dialogue?
Yeah, a lot of it came down to when we, like sort of working with him in terms of getting the character's background and so giving him a lot of information about the character that may not have been, you know, on the screen in the end, may not have been even in the script in the end, but was just in my own head from when I had written it. So working with him and having like long conversations about, you know, what the character's background and life had looked like, I think gave him some skills there. And then on top of that, he did a little bit of, over in Greece, he did a little bit of training with some of the fishermen there. So we sent him out on some fishing boats so that he could get like some real hands-on experience there. And other than that, he also, the way that he was performing, he would do it, you know, we'd do a number of takes and he would do it a few different ways each time. He would often also sort of, I think in his performance, ramp it up throughout the scene. So if he wanted to end a scene in a certain way, he might, you know, from my perspective, I might have written or suggested that it end in this particular way. And he would do that and then he would give it a beat or two and then he would keep going into sort of how he thought it might end, or, you know, and he would do that a couple of different ways each time. So when you got to the editing room, we could cut it where I thought originally it would be, but he'd also given us a space to be like, oh, here's a couple of different options, you know? And I think that was, you know, a real mark of his talent was being able to act in a way that he knew he's giving us what we need, but at the same time, he's giving us options in the editing room.
And then Nikki as well, who is his counterpart in the film, spend a lot of time together and the relationship that they build up across the film is quite a powerful one. What was it like finding him?
Yeah, Nikki was very hard to find because he is a, you know, first-time film actor, and we're trying to cast someone who was written as quite a youngish character, sort of early to late teens. Nikki, we found through just a broad casting call we put out. And I remember I was in, I was overseas at the time, and I got a text both from Ada and a text from our other producer, Alyssa, at pretty much the exact same time saying, we've found the kid. And they were both independently watching in different countries, you know, his rehearsal tape. And then, yeah, so Nikki was great. We got him out there and he just was such a sport, you know. He was someone who was so dedicated to what he was doing. He would just put in so much effort. You know, if it was a tough day on set, like sort of the scenes we were shooting were tough for him or the character, he would come in with such a different emotionality the whole day. It was interesting to watch him sort of even just behind the scenes, just the way he got into the character. And he did that a lot through music as well. And then on top of that, to have him, you know, just be willing to go anywhere with the character and be willing to sort of put in so much time into speaking with me and Ada and talking about the character's backstory and its motivations and working through the accent and the dialogue as well. Yeah, we did a lot of rehearsal with Nikki over Zoom originally and then also on set in the lead up to shooting. But I think he really did an incredible job. And I think also the fact that he had such an incredible attitude behind the scenes, I think that speaks really highly of his own character. You know, he worked so hard, and to see that, it was really inspiring to the rest of us as well, not just me, but the rest of the crew, and even probably Costas and some of the other more experienced actors on set, because, you know, to see someone just sort of put in that level of effort was really remarkable.
One of the other aspects in the thematic aspect of the film is dealing with the refugee crisis, and Greece is a real hotbed for that at the moment. What did you learn from being there in Greece and being around that kind of atmosphere where, you know, even now, years later, it's still a massive thing that's going on in that particular region of the world?
Well, one of the great things I thought that we experienced was before shooting, while I was still sort of putting the final touches on the script, we spoke with one of the representatives from the UNHCR over in Greece. And so we had a big meeting with them and really got into the idea. Firstly, got into, you know, what is happening over there and the refugee crisis going on, but also, I suppose, working through some of our original assumptions in the script about what that character might experience and how you might portray them on screen. And that changed, I think, a lot of how I wound up writing Theo, because one of the things that really resonated with me when they spoke about it was talking about how, you know, they really want the messaging around these people, and these, you know, these people really want their own stories to not be dictated by or completely consumed by the fact that they are a refugee. You know, so for me, writing Theo, the original past probably had a little bit more of that bent of making it, you know, that his key driver. And subsequently, I went back through and tried to instead draw out a little bit more about what made him as a person. You know, he's a avid reader, and he's such a joyous person and such a buoyant personality, and someone who cares so much for others. And so we tried to blend that in as well. And then on top of that, you know, there's a lot of incredible stuff that they talk about in Greece about this spirit of compassion and sort of opening your door to strangers and that sort of thing. And I think the film in general touched on that as a concept as well, and really worked to, you know, give that element to both Theo and Hector's character as well. Not have it one-sided coming from the Greek sailor to the refugee, but ultimately to have both giving the other that level of compassion and what they need.
And again, that strength of who Hector is as a person, we've seen him go through a lot. And obviously we see Theo go through a lot as well, but in particular, Hector's ability to bring what he's learnt throughout his life, the weight of the pain that he lives with as well, really strengthens that particular relationship. I'm curious for you then, after the film had been shot, the edits done, what was your emotional reaction getting to see that play out for the first time in a cinema?
Well, to be honest with you, I've never seen it in the cinema.
No?
Outside of when we're editing it. No. You know, when I watched Salt of the Earth in the theatre at Adelaide Film Festival, it was, my heart was just pumping the whole time. And that was 10 minutes. And I was like, I can't do that for, you know, 100 minutes. I thought, you know, it's such an interesting process going through making the film and, you know, being obviously running a film magazine yourself. I always, when I first suggested to my parents that I wanted to do film, one thing they said to me was, will you stop enjoying it? You know, stop enjoying, you love going to see movies. Will you stop enjoying it if you start doing that? And they said the same thing sort of when I was doing film reviews all the time. Will you stop enjoying the films? You know, and what I love about doing film reviews is that I have never stopped enjoying the films or stopped being able to view them as myself still, even irrespective of the criticism or the review part of it. Yeah, so it was 3.5 hours long, the first cut of the film. And when you cut that down to 90 minutes or 100 minutes, you have to lose a lot of stuff and you have to watch it a lot of times. And I've probably watched it, you know, 100, 150 times. And Ada's probably watched it, you know, double that at least. So by the time you get to go and see it in cinema, it's sort of like, for me, I know every beat that happens already. You know, I can see it in my head right now, every single scene. So if I was like, why not just sit it out, enjoy it? I did watch, you know, one of the early, while we're testing it for the sound and stuff in the theater, but I've never watched it in cinema with an audience. I've seen the first scene in there at the Greek Film Festival. I watched that until the big title sequence comes on. But yeah, that's about it.
Let's talk about Greek Film Festival then. What was it like being able to screen it there? What was the audience reaction like?
Yeah, it was really cool. I think it was interesting because we played both the Greek Film Festival and the Brisbane International Film Festival at the same time, or very, very close to one another. And sort of seeing the different responses was interesting. I remember I went up to the Brisbane Greek Film Festival screening, and we did a Q&A afterwards, and it was just to find the way in which people resonated with the movie, particularly from the Greek community, was really, you know, affirming. And I think that it's a sort of movie that hopefully has, you know, a broader message, but on top of that also has that level of, you know, that level of like beautiful Greek scenery and immersiveness that I think will bring people who are Greek and who are expats, you know, into really feeling that sort of nostalgia and longing, but at the same time will bring people who've never been there, probably to a travel agent to book a flight to Greece. You know, it's something that even still, like looking at the stills and looking at my photos of the time from over there, it's so beautiful.
That's a great transition to talking about working with Oliver Hay as well, who is a cinematographer I've admired for a while. Big Dog and Bass and Dream, both two films I really appreciate and love, and now The Aegean as well. The way he captures, in particular, talking about that sunlight, the way he captures sunlight is like nothing else. What was it like working with him?
Yeah, Ollie's great. I think Ollie is the perfect cinematographer for this film because, you know, you're right about the sunlight, and it's something that when people ask me about, oh, you know, why Greece and what was different about filming in Greece and Australia, like there's so many things, but one of the fundamental things is of course the sun. And for us, the script had so many scenes that were set at dawn or at dusk, and going over to Greece and having such a longer sunset gave us a lot more to play with. I remember Ollie talked to me once about how the false color that he had on the camera over there never went to red. You know, we didn't need as many ND filters or anything like that. The sun wasn't as harsh. So we had a lot more, you know, a lot more latitude to be able to shoot stuff that we wanted to shoot without needing as much time to set up and that sort of thing. And for an indie film like this, that's such a constrained schedule, shooting in a foreign country, being able to have a cinematographer who's so quick on his feet, so good with natural lighting and good with capturing, you know, the light that was over there as well. You know, it was invaluable to us to be able to do that. And we got so much more out of the process because we were able to work with Ollie.
And I mean, as you're saying, first time filmmaker, and you're doing some pretty impressive stuff of being out in the ocean and doing underwater shots as well. Like those are intense things in a completely different place, country that's not Australia. What was that like?
So the stuff on the boat was over there. It was definitely, you know, it was an interesting experience to be filming on the boat, particularly because it was such a small boat and we had hired it from a, you know, a local Greek man, Lazarus, who was great and who helped us a lot. But also when you're on the boat, it was so small, it was only really me, Ollie, the two actors and the sound recordist and the second AC. And everyone else was on this support boat. And so we had a really small group on there and none of us spoke Greek except for Kostas, and Lazarus only spoke Greek really. So it was like anytime we needed anything done with the boat, we'd have to ask the lead actor to go and translate it for us with the boat guy. And then the boat guy would speak to Kostas and they'd have a long discussion. And then Kostas would come back and summarize it in like one or two words. And we'd be like, I'm sure you guys have spoken more than what you're telling me here. But yeah, it was a tough one also shooting on that boat because for the sound and for Ollie and for the sound recorders, Max, you know, the constantly shifting horizon and the eardrum being linked in created a little bit of seasickness for them. So that was something we probably didn't expect. but it definitely, yeah, I'm not sure if I would shoot again in the same way that we did, just getting on a boat and going out to sea. Kind of made sense while we're out there why people don't usually do that. But subsequently, I think it does look good in the film. So that sort of paid off for us. And then the underwater stuff I shot in Greece myself originally. And it was good, but we felt like we still weren't getting exactly what we needed for the underwater stuff. So we shot it again down at Corumban Beach with Nathan Frost, who's a great underwater cinematographer that we know here. And he came down one morning, helped us out, and we just found someone to double Nikki for that.
But I mean, again, that I know, as you said, you're probably not rushing out to shoot it like that again, but it does look really good. You're out there, you're feeling it, and you know, you can almost feel that salt air as well. Shifting over to talking about the score too, so Alistair Harrison is the composer here. It's beautiful, beautiful work. Can you talk about working with Alistair for the oral side of the film?
One of the things that I think the film, we knew with the film was going to be important, was the soundscape and the visual landscape as well. And so that was why, you know, we talk about it looking good out on the water and it looking good in Greece. Like, we knew that we wanted to get out there and shoot that because there's not a ton of dialogue to mask over the visuals, you know? It's got to be immersive, and a whole part of it was making it feel, you know, making it feel, I suppose, isolating. So being out there on the island and filming it out there on the island was giving us that benefit. You know, we could move the camera exactly where we wanted, and we could capture it as beautifully as we were seeing it in real life. And then to take that exact feeling and transport it into the oral landscape, we really needed a composer, I think, who had that knowledge and that ability to work with us to really delve into what the emotionality of each scene was, and to also give us the ability to carry people through each scene with the music and the visuals, even when there wasn't a ton of dialogue. And I think Alistair did a great job of that. I've known Alistair since 2006, I've been friends with Alistair since. And he is, you know, the best musician I've ever met. And he worked very intensely with us on creating, you know, a score that we were all happy with and that we all felt was capturing the exact vibe of what we wanted. And yeah, I think he did a tremendous job. He gave us so many options for a number of the things. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And I think the benefit of being friends with him for that long was that when it didn't work for me, I could tell him and we could have the argument. And when it did work, I was happy to also tell him it was working really well. And you know, sometimes you get attached also to music that is used in the, you know, in the assembly edit or the edit before the music gets attached to it that our editor Steph put in. So he was great at also working with us with that music, and we're like, we love this song, you know, but we want you to have composed everything, and we want it to be more specific to this, and we want a little bit more of this. And he was able to do that. He also worked in a lot of you know, classical Greek instruments as well. So yeah, he's such a scholar of music that he was able to really delve into some of the history of Greek instruments and work with some of those and bring elements of those in where we could, without making it, I think, feel, you know, feel cheap or feel like a pastiche to that.
And it's my understanding his first film that he's composed as well.
Yeah, it was, you know, which is interesting because we worked with him before on some. He is in a band. Him and his sister have a band called Hills, and so we've seen him composing a lot of stuff for that before. But and subsequently I've had him do the music for another film that Ada and I are producing, which is a documentary. And again, he's nailed it there. Completely different tone. It's like space, country space is how I describe that score. Whereas this is obviously extremely different. But yeah, he just sort of, I think a lot of the people that we had on board the project were sort of stepping up into a role or doing it for the first time. And then we had a number of key areas where we had someone with that sort of gray hair experience. And I think that was really nice to be able to do because it was important to me. as a first-time filmmaker, to be able to bring some of those people who I knew wanted to be in that industry and wanted to be doing stuff in that space along with me as well.
You mentioned Steph too. So let's talk about working alongside Steph in the edit. What was it like getting the rhythm and the vibe, and what kind of guidance did you give her to say, this is the mood and the vibe that I want in the edit?
I would say that Steph, you know, in particular with something like Costas's performance, Steph, me and Costas probably all had an equal hand almost in what that winds up becoming, because so much of it is chosen by what she's doing in the edit room. And I think that stretched across the whole film as well. What I like about Steph most is that she's willing to tell me when she thinks I'm wrong, which is something that's incredibly valuable because, you know, and we could have the argument about it as well. We could have the discussion about it and then get to a point where we're both happy with what's being put on the screen. So we've spent a long time with Steph. We had a benefit of being sort of over the Christmas break when we were editing that together. And she, you know, she brought a lot of her own ideas to what the film should be. And I think that obviously we started with, you know, putting it together as it was written in the script. But then we were free to play with a lot of that. You know, we played with shifting different elements around. And I think because it's a movie that is, you know, doesn't have as much dialogue as some other films, it is able to be, you know, shifted and moved around and sort of the structure of it played with a little bit more than perhaps something that has more of that dialogue in. And so we did definitely test that around and sort of see what we're all happy with. But yeah, I mean, Steph was very impressive to me. I would work with her again in a heartbeat. I think she really made this film what it is in the edit room. And I think she did an incredible job.
Yeah, I mean, again, the mood and the vibe is so tangible. I understand. So it's heading out into the world now to go into cinemas and the things you're talking about, screening in film festivals and the like. What's your expectations? What are your hopes for other audiences to experience from the film?
I think that having been, you know, having it played already in a couple of film festivals at the end of last year, we really got an interesting look at what people were resonating with the film. What I liked most about, I think, some of those film festivals as well was leaving and speaking to the people who had seen it and seeing them sort of make their own conclusions. It is a movie, I think, where you can make your own conclusions a little bit. It's not laying everything out on the table for you. And, you know, as much as for me, I wanted the themes and the exploration to be things about vulnerability and how we connect with each other and how we handle loss and grief. So if the audience is leaving and they feel like they've connected with the characters, or they, you know, they see a reflection of themselves there, or they start a conversation about relationships and emotional healing, then I feel like I've done my job. But at the same time, you know, what I've loved most is people leaving and taking something else from it. And, you know, I remember one of the moments that was interesting to me is something that Hector does when he gets on the boat and he kisses a photo of his wife on the thing. And when my sister left, she was like, oh, is that meant to be like you sending a kiss up to our grandmother? And I was like, no, I never thought of that, but it's a great thing. Maybe I will. Maybe that was what I meant, you know? And so people go in there. And one of the, you know, when I talked earlier about how you sort of lose objectivity in the film, when I left the first screening of it and a friend came up to me and said, like, you didn't tell me that Hector didn't speak for the whole movie. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that, you know, because when I was watching the film, editing it, it became just part of the fabric of the film. And I think that, you know, for this movie, people going in, it should be a movie where it's one of those films that I think plays well in a theater, because it's something like, you know, I think about some of the films that I've seen in the theater that would be similar. It's something like Patterson or Perfect Days, films where it's as much a sort of slice of life and immersion into the space and the time as it is a story. And films like that, you know, they do best, I think, in the theatre, where you are fully disconnected and fully engaging with the movie. And for me, when people leave the theatre, if they have that experience of having been sort of submerged in the Aegean submerged in the film, then I think that would be the goal for us.
You talk as well about having, like, you review films and the like. Now you're a filmmaker. You've done documentary short. You've done a feature film narrative. How will your relationship with film reviews, now that you've made films, change? Like, have you considered that kind of relationship now, as the you've gone through the hard yards? Will your perspective on what other people have done change as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I think about it all the time. I thought about it over there. Every moment that was hard over there, I was like, why did I say those things about that other film years ago? Yeah. No, I think that one of the things that I've always tried to, or in doing film reviews that I came to along the way, was that there's a difference, in my opinion, between film criticism and film review. And when I review a movie, or when I, you know, when I give a score to a movie, or I put it in a magazine up here in Brisbane and say, hey, this is, I recommend going to see this movie, or I don't recommend going to see this movie, it's not targeted necessarily always at the quality of the film. You know, it's targeted at the audience member for whom, you know, the cost of a movie ticket has become so much more expensive. And in a cost of living crisis, they've got to choose between all these movies that are coming out, and they're only coming out for maybe 1 week or 2 weeks these days before they go on streaming. And, you know, they've got to make a decision, like, oh, do I take my partner to this? Is this a good date movie? Or do I take, you know, take my kids to go see this movie? Are they going to enjoy it? Am I going to enjoy it as well? Or is my ticket just going to be a wasted cost? So that's where I've started to get to that a little bit more, having gone through the filmmaking process, is for me, reviewing is now focused on the audience member, and is it a good use of your money to go and see this movie? Or should you wait until an opportunity when you can see it, you know, at less cost? But yeah, definitely it's something I thought about often and continue to think about, is how the two can meld together and continue on. And I mean, you see that all the time. I was feeling that when I was going to different film events up here, and you would be asked to interview on one side of the red carpet, even if it was an event where, you know, you were there having come off this. I remember I went to Brisbane Film Festival off the back of Salt of the Earth, and you can't be on both sides of the carpet. You can't be on the red carpet being interviewed and also on the side interviewing. You have to make a choice in those events and in that space, because they'll never see you one way or the other. They'll never see us both at the same time. So I still love reviewing films, and I just try and take it from that perspective. I mean, one of the ways that my film reviews have always resonated is with my aunt and uncle and cousins, who always say if I give it a good review, they know they don't want to see it. And if I give it a bad review, they know they're going to love that movie. And, you know, that works for some people. I'm like, great. So you guys know, you know, you guys are getting value out of it. And I think if people are getting value out of, you know, someone they trust, a voice they trust, to be like, hey, if that person liked or didn't like the movie, then I know how I'm going to feel about it, then that's a benefit to somebody.
As a last question then, like, again, you did a documentary, you did narrative feature. Are you looking for kind of balance the two different styles of filmmaking? Where do you see your career as a filmmaker going forward?
Again, a question I ask myself all the time. I think it's a mix. I mean, they're both hard, right? I think if you're a film or someone who's looking to get into filmmaking, like, it's a hard experience to do. It's hard to make a movie. It's hard to get over the line. And every time you think it's going to get somewhere where you think you're like, okay, I just need to finish shooting and then it's going to be smooth sailing, or I just need to finish the edit, then it's going to be smooth sailing, it's not. But at the same time, I'm so proud of both The Aegean and Salt of the Earth, that I would not stop doing it if I had the, you know, if that was an option to me, I would not stop doing it. I think that I've gone subsequently on to shoot another documentary that I produced and was cinematographer on over in the US about the eclipse, which is just sort of wrapping up post-production now. And that was a great experience again, but, you know, it was something where coming off the feature, I was like, it'd be great to get back into doing documentary because it's easier. And then you go out there and shoot it and you have to work through hundreds and hundreds of hours of documentary footage, and you're like, oh, it's not that much easier. If it's probably not easier at all. And at the same time, I've just written the first pass on a script for a French set murder mystery, which Screen Queensland kindly gave us development funding for. So I think that for me, you know, being able to write something and or do documentary, both of them are really focused on telling the same story. And even if you look back to when I was in consulting or when I was doing engineering and finance, both of those occasions, the things that I was good at was telling a story. If the story was, you know, and getting to the truth of the story, if it was, you know, if it was in a business case or if it was, in a, like an executive summary for an engineering package, or if it was, you know, now in a film, the medium changes, I think, but the thing you're trying to do stays the same, right? Which is you're trying to make the audience member or make, you know, the reader or make the viewer engage with what you engage with from the story, get the message of it and sort of feel what you feel. So if that's documentary or if that's, you know, scripted feature, both are good with me. But yeah, at the moment, I think currently we're sort of alternating between the two, right? We've gone one documentary, one scripted feature, another documentary, and now working on this other scripted feature. So that's kind of a nice way to do it.
I mean, it's a bit like Ben Lawrence, who went from doing documentaries, Hearts and Bones, did another documentary, and then you might end up in the same kind of realm that he did, where he did the TV series, which was both a documentary and a scripted event. So it's like you're melding the two together. You know, I'm curious to see where you go as a filmmaker in that capacity. No doubt, I mean, again, as we were talking about before, like Queensland's such a hotbed for different things. So I'm excited to see what you do. And French murder mystery sounds exciting too. So it's huge amount coming on the horizon. I'm excited, Jacob. It's been great to be able to talk with you.
Thanks, Andrew. It's nice to speak to you too. Always love the Curb. So nice to chat with you.
Thanks for listening to this interview with Jacob Richardson for his film The Aegean, which arrives in Australian cinemas from the 16th of May 2025. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you on the next one.